Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Royce Young from Brick City. Is that what they call it? Brick City?
Brick City. No, Brick Town.
Brick Town. That's what it is.
Oh, my gosh.
Brick Town. Well, there's a city in the name.
Yeah, Oklahoma City. Yeah. There's a city in that.
So then why is it Brick Town?
I don't know. That's just... Brick Town is... Well, okay. Since obviously you don't know. I'll educate.
Clearly I don't.
Brick Town is... a section of Oklahoma City. So like if you have downtown Oklahoma City and you actually drive under a bridge and the bridge says welcome to Bricktown on it, and there's like a section of Oklahoma City. It used to be all these old warehouses and that are all built, everything's built out of brick, the same red brick in this section of town. And now that section of town is kind of the entertainment district, got all the bars and the restaurants and that type of stuff.
Okay. So Bricktown, I think Brick City is something Redman used to rap about. Maybe it's like a Detroit thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's not Bricktown's not a nickname for Oklahoma City as much as it's an actual part.
Part of the town. Okay. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going good. other than your geographical.
Oh my God, I really butchered that. It's almost as bad as having a broken orbital socket.
Yes. That's not like the worst injury, I feel like.
I've had a lot of painful injuries in my life. I can't imagine a facial bone being broken. I've never had that.
Well, okay. I full disclosure, I've never broken a bone in my body, so I don't know what that process feels like. But I would imagine it would suck really bad, and like you would feel like – you would actually like feel the bone break. And for it to happen in your face – obviously we're talking about Larry Sanders.
Yes.
For it to happen in your face, I feel like would be really upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, I've broken fingers, broken toes. I broke my forearm. I cracked my sternum once. Like those are all very painful. Yeah, no, I'm apparently brittle. I'm an old brittle man.
Do you not drink milk?
I'm the oldest 32-year-old in the world.
Golly. Sounds like you have a full body cast on right now.
I didn't do all these at once.
Oh, okay.
And they're all healed by now. The most embarrassing one though is the cracked sternum, because literally all I did was I leaned back in a chair trying to crack my back.
Oh my God.
And it just popped. And it like, it was this immediate rush of pain in my chest. I thought, well, that can't be good. And then I went to
Benjamin Button. Just like falling apart.
And then I went to the doctor and he's like, yeah, you have a hairline fracture in your sternum. I was like, how is that even possible? And he literally just kind of gave me I don't know.
Your body sucks. Yeah.
So I've broken and cracked bones before. It is a very painful moment, and then it's just like it's this weird sensation where it's just this like kind of resonating pain whenever you move the area.
Yeah.
So as long as he doesn't have to smile or frown or talk, I would imagine he'll be fine.
So back to you for a second, because sure, you're what's important here. So how do you heal a cracked sternum? Obviously, you don't put like a cast on it.
Yeah, it was, I mean...
Just rest?
It was just don't lift anything.
Wow.
Yeah, it was don't lift anything for, I think it was supposed to be like 4 to 6 weeks. I think after about 3, I was fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was when I was working for the Court of Appeals in California. And so I wasn't allowed to like lift any files or... Because the files would be, I don't know, the files could get pretty big. They'd be like 10 or 12 pounds.
You probably just milked it all the way. Like,
oh my God! I worked.
Copy for me. It's like a single sheet of paper, and you're like, I can't.
I worked on my website. That's how I got here.
Yeah.
I just used that time. I just sat at my desk and just worked on my website.
This is all part of your strategy.
Yeah. Just lean back in a chair until your sternum cracks. You'll become a writer.
Yeah. Perfect.
So I actually wanted to frame this around, because the Bucks are even more of a mess than they have been with this injury. Not that Larry Sanders was actually turning things around. Mm-hmm. But I look at that, and I was on the radio this morning, and they asked me, you know, how can a team like Milwaukee really keep players? And I immediately thought, well, Oklahoma City and Indiana do it.
Yeah.
Like they're so what's the difference between how obviously Milwaukee doesn't get as many talented players through the draft and the impact players through the draft that the Thunder have, but in terms of developing and building an organization, you know, what do the Bucks have to do to be the next Thunder?
I think that, you know, what so many teams where they miss the mark in trying to be the next Thunder is they don't understand like that it is a real like gritty, difficult process that you have to go through. And the Bucks, I think, are kind of, you know, this is, sounds stupid, but they're doing the hard part. They're losing,
right?
And you know that opens the door for you to, you know, potentially go get a franchise changing player like maybe Andrew Wiggins or Joel Embiid or whoever. You know, you have the potential now to go find your Kevin Durant. You know, there's no guarantee that any of those guys, Jabari Parker or whoever, would be a Kevin Durant. But that's what you're looking for, essentially. And that's what made Sam Presti's building job in Oklahoma City so much easier, is that he kind of got that first guy. But I think what so many people don't understand in Oklahoma City is that it wasn't like Presti just picked Kevin Durant, then picked Russell Westbrook, then picked Serge Ibaka, then picked James Harden. The Thunder have a very, very regimented developmental structure that they've installed. And I think that what organizations have to do is that they have to basically reevaluate how they're going to operate from the top down. And the Thunder, when Presti took over and when Clay Bennett became the owner and Presti took over as general manager, they wiped it clean. They were like, we are doing things in the most professional, upstanding, perfect manner in which we can do. We want to be the best professional sports franchise there is and do everything in the most appropriate way from the way we develop our young players. You know, the attention to detail that the Thunder have is just incredible, from everything from sleep coaches to diet training to teaching players how to watch film to, you know, it's almost like, you know, John Wooden and how he taught the players to tie their shoes. That's almost kind of the mentality that the Thunder have. So I think organizations like the Bucks have to start from that top down, and it's not as simple as, oh, we're going to go pick Andrew Wiggins and it's going to fix everything. You've got to, you know, the Bucks have something unique in place. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Sure.
They have him there, which is a player that they could potentially build around. So I think that they just have to start and kind of, you know, re-identify how they're going to run their organization.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's, I completely agree. I think that that's, in looking at Minnesota, you know, they still have so many front office people from the last 15, 20, 25 years
right in
place. Not necessarily the top decision makers, but just guys here and there. And it's like, all right, they brought Flip Saunders back and got rid of David Kahn. And, you know, Saunders has made a few good moves here. But there is and Saunders brought in guys of like, hey, we need to figure out why we're so injured. And so he brought in, you know, a new-ish training staff, still the main trainers here, but like brought in some different medical people and training people, and it seemed to have helped so far, and they're monitoring the health and injuries a lot better than they did last year. But there's still a certain point where you wonder, at what point do you just wipe everything clean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when maybe that's a point where, all right, Kevin Love leaves and Ricky Rubio's not good, and then at a certain point it's like, all right, we have to blow the entire thing up and start from the ground up. And maybe you'll see that with the Bucks. I mean, there's really nothing to hang on to in that organization, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah. even Giannis, even Larry Sanders, even John Henson, those are all guys we like, but there's nobody you have to keep. There could be a certain point where you sell off everything.
Yeah. Wipe
the front office clean, wipe the training staff and coaching staff and all that, and just say it's going to be like a brand new organization.
Yeah, I think that kind of maybe it would be interesting. That might be kind of the theme that a team that's rebuilding should take, is that, like, let's treat ourselves like we're an expansion franchise, and that we don't have any history, we don't have any baggage with us, and we're starting over, and we're going to do it our own way. And, you know, like, you know, Sam Presti decided to keep a couple players, kept Nick Collison because he likes, you know, Nick Collison's the longest tenured player with the team currently because, you know, he fit the identity, he fit everything that they wanted to develop. So, you know, the Bucks could, you know, if they have a player that they, you know, feel like that they should keep, I don't know who that might be.
Yeah, maybe it's Giannis.
He's a good example because he does look like he has, you know, a lot of potential, a lot of talent.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know that he necessarily is going to be a 10-time All-Star or anything, but, you know, he's a player that I think that he's worthwhile to see what he's got. And, you know, a guy like Larry Sanders has had some off-the-court stuff. And, you know, I think that Oklahoma City has a, you know, kind of a, you know, they factor in character as much as they do anything else. And I'm not saying that every franchise needs to do that, because really it comes down to whether or not you can play basketball. But at the same time, you don't want players like Larry Sanders. This isn't the right word, but you don't want them corrupting your young players and, like,
right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
The culture that you're trying to to foster. And I'm not saying Larry Sanders is a bad guy, but you have to be careful with that kind of stuff, especially when you've got young players that are very impressionable and they're learning how to play in the league. You know, you can't just, you know, bring in guys that are only good at basketball. You have to have that overall umbrella of culture that everybody kind of falls under.
Well, and I mean, thinking of Indiana, isn't that kind of what they did? They had a horrible reputation because of Steven Jackson, Jamal Tinsley, and Ron Artest, and
exactly.
They went out and they got all these great guys that at a certain point it becomes such a resonating factor throughout your organization, top to bottom, that you can bring in a guy like Lance Stevenson who has a checkered pass and say, look, this is how you become a professional. You follow the lead of these guys, and if you do that and work hard and trust us with your development, you will become, you know, an all-star caliber player, which he's been this year. And at that point, you can kind of be almost a Spurs-type organization where you can take in anybody.
Right.
And no matter what their past, like a Steven Jackson, and make it work.
I think comparing the Thunder and the Pacers is one of the more interesting things in the league. And, you know, the different building styles. You know, the Thunder was all about top five lottery picks and developing young players and then piecing things in around them. The Pacers didn't have any top five picks. You know,
right.
their guys, Paul George, I don't know what they were all drafted, but I know that they all – was Roy Hibbert top 10?
I feel like Hibbert was like around 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And George was like 11.
Yeah, so they didn't really draft anybody that was like, this guy's a sure thing franchise builder here. That it was more about like take players that they felt like that they could develop and then piece it together with quality veterans and yeah, I think that they're as interesting as the Thunder are, and because that's a different model that you can follow. You know, maybe the Pacers model is more applicable to the Bucks because, you know, they've got some young players that weren't necessarily taken in the top five. More than likely, the Bucks are going to have a top five pick this year. But, you know, I think that shows you that there's just not one route to doing this. You know, it's not just the Thunder philosophy is the only successful way to do it. There are other ways to become a solid NBA team. And really, it seriously just starts with your management. Like, you just have to be able to understand how you're going to run your organization.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is you have to have a plan. You have to have a direction and say, this is the identity we're searching for, and this is what we're going to put together, and we're going to find, you know, that's what we believe in, and that's what we're going to build, and not just, oh, that guy's talented. Oh, that guy's good. Oh, let's see if we can get them to work, you know?
Oh, we have cap space. We should spend that.
Right. That's the thing that frustrates me the most. It ends up being like the Cleveland organization is like, oh, we have all this cap space we can use.
And you got to use it.
You have to use it. Yeah, it's like, I mean, when I was 20, it was like, oh, I've got money. I'm going to go buy shoes and DVDs because that's what I do. Like, I've got money. I got to spend it. Like, and
it's dollars. I should spend 90 of that.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't make any sense necessarily, the patience of it all, which I guess is hard. And the Thunder didn't have to worry about this because they were coming to a new city that was excited about the organization. But it's hard when you have those season ticket holders you have to please in some way. And then maybe that's when you just have to have a very creative you know, marketing team that's coupled with a patient owner.
Right. And, you know, I think that so many teams, you know, they have like this this pipe dream of like that in their off season. You know, you looked at it with the Pistons and who they signed, you know, spending big money on Josh Smith. I think that they think that like, you know, you just we got to find that guy. And I think everybody thinks that they're going to go sign LeBron each off season.
Right.
And like, there's only one LeBron. And there's really only like maybe two or three players in the entire league that are going to completely change the fortune of your franchise just by virtue of signing them and signing no one else. So, you know, it's not like that there's like this quick, easy fix for everybody. And I was actually talking to my little brother about it last night, and he was kind of like, you know, why would anybody want Josh Smith? Like, he's not that good. He makes too much money. And I was like, because somebody has to sign him. Like, right. Somebody has to do it. Like, he's just good enough to be paid the big money, and like, it's like one of the more like incredible things in professional sports is like, this guy's not good. We all know it. And he does stupid things, but like, somebody's got to sign him and somebody's got to pay him $50 million. So like,
no, that's a great point. Cause it really, cause there's always going to be a GM who is looking to save his job.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of move that happens where, hey, you remember Josh Smith? He's got a bunch of highlights. He won a dunk contest. He's a great defensive player. Like, yeah, we just signed him. Come spend money. Come buy tickets. Come check him. Come see him dunk and shoot 22 footers that don't go in. Like, that's the, that ends up being the thing. There's always going to be a GM who's on the hot seat, and that's the kind of move those guys make. And now, I mean, look at the Pistons. They fire Mo Cheeks, which is, I think, I don't have a problem with that move. He wasn't exactly blowing my socks
off.
Shouldn't
have hired him in the first place.
Right, exactly. He wasn't a good fit there. I thought maybe it could work because I like him, but it clearly not the, the personnel he would need. And they're another team that you look going forward, it's like, oh, well, they can either match a big money offer to Greg Monroe this offseason. They're going to have a an Andre Drummond extension in a couple of years to worry about. And then you've got, you know, a few guys on the books for big money and no real direction. I mean, I guess their direction is they're kind of trying to be a Clippers Lob City
right
type of team. But, they definitely – you don't have Chris Paul. You have Brandon Jennings, and that just doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it is amazing to me. I mean, the Pistons, since they won their championship and that team kind of broke up, is that – they've had so many opportunities, and I don't know if it's the Darko pick that really was the downfall of it all, but they've had so many opportunities to change the fortune of that franchise, and they have not done it at all. And it's Joe Dumars, he earned his reputation because he was in charge of championship teams, but you know, it kind of makes you wonder, like, geez, you know, he's like 0-9 in his last 9 years here.
Like, I mean, it really, like, the move to trade for Rasheed Wallace gave them a championship.
Right.
Like, that was a great move. And then after that, he traded for, like, a very old Derek Coleman at one point.
Allen Iverson trade was...
Iverson for Billups was just a desperation move. He traded away Carlos Delfino, who could have been a really nice role player for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were just a lot of...
I think his worst moves was how much did he spend combined on Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva.
I think it was like close to $90 million or maybe...
That was just like... That's the perfect example of like, I've got money to spend. I might as well blow it on somebody.
He's done this twice now.
Yeah.
He did it with Charlie and Ben, and then he did it with Brandon and Josh Smith. At least he got better players this time.
Yeah.
But Jesus.
Yeah.
I guess I don't... If they make the playoffs, does that absolve him? I just don't see like any. I see their ceiling is about what it is. Just there will be a relative record to however good the East is.
That's my question though. Is making the playoffs at say, 35-47 and getting swept by the Pacers, is that really making the playoffs? I guess you get two games in your city, but is that really making the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like it to me. I know they get
playoff. Isn't that just kind of extending the misery of your fan base?
Yeah, they get playoff revenue, which is great for the owner. Maybe that's all the owner will end up caring about.
You get playoff experience for Brandon Jennings, which is just wonderful.
Right, exactly. Like, you get that core together. I guess it's to get Andre Drummond shooting free throws in the playoffs. That'll be something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that doesn't really feel like making the playoffs. And there's a certain point where you have to look at these teams, and the Hawks were a good example of this for a few years, and the Bucks when Brandon Jennings there was a good example, and now it's the Pistons. It's like, are you building towards something, or are you just trying to get into the playoffs?
Exactly. I've always called that NBA purgatory. I don't know if I came up with that or if I heard it from somebody else, but I feel like it's just like you are stuck in no man's land.
Yeah.
Of like you don't really have a direction, but you're definitely not good enough to compete for anything.
Right. Yeah. I've always looked at it as like a treadmill team.
Yeah. What's the point of
your team? You're running, but you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And just
what's the point of your team? Like you're just kind of there. You just kind of exist.
And then and then you've got the Knicks.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Knicks. Who? I mean, it's good that Mike Woodson doesn't expect to be fired. That's fine.
Yeah. Which, like, he was asked about that in Oklahoma City on Sunday when I was there. And, I put it up the post today for us that, the way he says it, it's like, sure, I expect to be the Knicks coach. It makes it sound like Mike Woodson's been told that, hey, you're our coach and you just got to keep it. But, like, the way he said it was like, of course I expect to be the Knicks coach. I haven't been fired yet. So I'm not waking up tomorrow thinking I'm not the coach anymore. So. It wasn't exactly like the most confident thing in the world.
Was it what was it like watching that matchup in person? Because there's, you know, there's going to be the buzz of Carmelo versus Durant,
right?
But why I haven't gotten a chance to see the Knicks up close this year. Is it really that big of a mess in person?
I wouldn't. They really didn't feel like that big of a mess to me on Sunday. They were kind of in the game. Carmelo got dominated. I mean, there's just no way other to put it. You know, Durant guarded him for most of the game.
Shut him down too. He was like 2 of 10 against him or something like that.
Yeah, I think he had 15 points. He was 5 of 19 overall. I think he went 3 of 11 against Durant.
Yeah.
Didn't score in the fourth quarter. And, you know, meanwhile, Durant's almost going for 40, 10, and 10. He goes for 41, 10 rebounds, 9 assists. So, I mean, just in the under the microscope of that matchup alone, I feel like that Sunday, like, showed a lot of what we have seen. And, you know, Kevin Durant's been the better player than Carmelo Anthony, I think, for the last 2 years, 3 years maybe. Been a better scorer. But I think you kind of – what I kind of took from it is Carmelo Anthony has been – an all-world, explosive, incredible offensive player since he was 20 years old.
Right.
Has every move in the book. He's great in the post, great on his pull-up jumper, can hit threes, great off the dribble. Everything about Carmelo Anthony, dominant offensive player without a doubt, or offensive scorer without a doubt. Kevin Durant was the same guy when he was 20 years old. Could score, had everything, you know, pull-up threes, in transition, finishing on the break, putting the ball on the floor, whatever. But I think what you've seen is that Kevin Durant did not remain satisfied as just that scorer. And I think that Carmelo Anthony has kind of just been satisfied as just being that scorer. And, you know, Durant showed the full arsenal that he has now as a great passer, as a good defender, as a rebounder, everything about Durant. He put it all on display Sunday against Carmelo Anthony, and Melo just had his scoring ability to fall back on. And so I think that that's kind of shown there's a reason that Kevin Durant has gone from being debated against Carmelo Anthony, and now Kevin Durant's being debated against LeBron James, and there's a reason for that.
Right. When I mean, which is kind of perfect because for that example, because Carmelo came into the league being debated against LeBron.
Right.
Same draft class, who's the better rookie, you know, Carmelo was making the playoffs right away, but LeBron didn't, and, you know, LeBron's game grew. Carmelo's is kind of, I mean, it's grown, but it's mostly the same. I guess it hasn't really expanded all that much. It's just improved, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's just, he's a better player than he was when he was 21 years old. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But it's just by nature of that, all those offensive skills that he has have gotten better. But has he really added much to his game overall? Maybe a little more in the post, but, you know, I wouldn't call him, you know, he's never been a great passer. He's never been a guy that's going to walk out and consistently get you 7-8 assists in a game. He's never been known for his defense. So, you know, Melo is a better player. There's no doubt about it. He's improved in that regard. But has he actually improved his complete overall game?
And I wonder, because, I mean, I think people would look at that, and I think, to me, it's if Carmelo just wanted to be as good as he was then, or that type of player, I have no problem with that. Like, there was a stretch where he was a top 10, 8 player for a good 4 or 5 years. And then, right. And he's still maybe a top 15, 20 guy in terms of talent. And if you just want to stay that way and make a bunch of money and have fun and play basketball, I actually have no problem with that. I think that that's a pretty good life to want to have.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I think either of us would get by on that. but to look at Kevin Durant in comparison and say, like, well, he just wanted to be the best. Like, he wasn't satisfied. I think, like, that's a great way of putting it, how you did, was he wasn't satisfied with what he was, and so he wanted to get better. And at a certain point, I wonder, is that on the GM or the owner of the team that Carmelo plays for to recognize that and adjust the game plan? Or is that on Carmelo to want to expand his game and be the best all-around player he can be? Like, I actually don't even know how I feel about that. It's kind of a weird, like, no, personality trait to examine.
That's interesting. You know, I feel like that, you know, every coach that's probably coached Carmelo Anthony has probably been really confused about, like, how are we supposed to play with this guy? He's an incredible offensive player. He's almost unstoppable when he gets it going, but he stops the ball. and we can't necessarily run offense around him. And like even one of the best offensive coaches that I can remember, George Karl, you could tell that he really wasn't sure how to coach Carmelo Anthony.
Oh yeah. And,
you know, I think that, you know, that's kind of a catch 22 with Melo, that like you've got this guy that is, you know, one of the probably five best scorers in the entire world, but like it's hard to run offense with him. You know? So it's like, how does that, it's like it, I don't know if it's, yeah, it may be a personnel thing, like you said, that like you've got to assemble a roster around him that's going to make the most sense. Maybe you need a point guard like, you know, what's probably the best point guard Melo's played with? I can't even probably think of one.
I mean, Lawson hadn't really, this is going to unfortunately rhyme. Lawson hadn't really blossomed before Carmelo. I love your underlying disgust there.
I hate that rhyme.
I guess Andre Miller?
Yeah.
Iverson? Iverson was kind of a point guard for them for a little while.
Okay. Not that I'm the smartest guy in the world, but like maybe that's a solution. Like
Chauncey Billups?
Carmelo, yeah, Chauncey was pretty good there for a while. But I mean, none of those guys I think were like really ball dominant point guards that like were floor general guys that controlled the game.
Exactly.
And like directed traffic, said you go there. So like I know there's always been the pipe dream of Chris Paul going to New York, but like honestly, like a guy like Rondo might be what the Knicks would need, or Carmelo Anthony, wherever he's playing, would need to bring the best out of him as a pure total offensive player. Somebody to get the ball out of his damn hands and give it to and move it a little bit, you know?
Yeah, that's actually interesting because I think I've always been of the opinion that surround Melo with shooters, even a shooting point guard, and give him the space to work. But maybe that is like you kind of have to save him from himself. Get a ball dominant distributing point guard who will set him up. It forces him to move. It forces him to post up more. It forces him to set screens. Like it almost makes him like, if you're going to get the ball, you have to get in motion. You have to get open, and then I'll get it to you. And maybe that is the real way to maximize his ability.
Because you look at the way the Thunder defended him on Sunday, and the Thunder, they really weren't. I mean, obviously this Knicks, you know, the Knicks role players are mostly garbage. So
right.
But, you know, the Thunder really weren't concerned with anybody else on that team. And, you know, they defended Melo with Durant, but they were bringing Ibaka weak side constantly. And they were not all that worried about anybody else beating them. They really didn't even worry that much about J.R. Smith. And I think that that's kind of, you know, Melo, that's the biggest problem I think Melo has right now is he has crap teammates. But, you know, I mean, who's the second best player on that team? I mean, really, who is it?
Got it. I mean, Tyson Chandler, but...
If he was healthy, I guess.
If he's healthy. I mean, amazingly, Amari might be the second best player on that team again.
Yeah.
He's been kind of good lately.
He was kind of good against the Thunder. He had a couple of nice baseline dunks.
I mean, if Amari was making $8 million a year, we'd love him, right?
Exactly.
Like, but he's getting 20, so it's just not, it's not worth it. But, I mean, J.R. Smith...
Yeah.
It's a depressing like bevy of options for Melo to really get help by. And that was the thing, is that Durant used his length and he was just so smart in how he defended him, but then having Ibaka come from that weak side and just blow things up. Ibaka, I'm starting to do things for like do research for an Ibaka piece on Thursday about his defense. He is a really good defender. I mean, he was a really good defender before, and you know, the internet kind of overreacted to him getting second place in Defensive Player of the Year. But he was still like, I think you and I have talked about this on here before. Like, he was still a top 10 defender. Like, he just wasn't the second best defender. But now he's like, he might legitimately be the second best defender in the league. I mean, he might be the best defender in the league. I think Roy Hibbert's going to get Defensive Player of the Year, but Ibaka is really damn good.
No, it's one of those things that, I mean, it's like, you know, he was so, he became overrated that now he's underrated. Now he might be properly rated.
Right.
But like, you know, I think it's one of those things that, you know, everybody that just kind of watches basketball casually overrates blocks as like a defensive indication of how good he is.
Right.
And block shots, I think that block shots are kind of similar to how we've viewed Ibaka, that I think a lot of people have thought that blocks were this overrated, stupid stat that like they don't really matter but like there are multiple times that a guy like Ibaka or Roy Hibbert or whoever, you're saving 2 points. I mean, it's virtually the same thing as scoring 2 points on the other end, which matters a lot. But there are times that Serge Ibaka comes and wipes out a wide open layup that would have been 2 points. So, you know, I wish that there was a way to like value a block, like actually put like a value on the block to say like, okay, this block was like on a jumper like 18 feet away that was contested and it really didn't matter too much because he might have missed it anyway. But like this block, it actually saved 2 points, because I feel like Serge Ibaka has a lot of those "this block saved 2 points" type of blocks.
Yeah, maybe that's where like that whole Kirk Goldsberry expected points from.
Maybe that's in there.
Yeah, maybe you use that and you start valuing, you know, defensive stops a little bit more correctly. Because I think also the problem has always been like Ibaka slaps the ball into the third row. And it's like, Right. Well, why did you do that? Because everyone, I mean, I've said it before too, but everyone's like, oh, you should just catch it or you should block it to a teammate. Well, sometimes you just have to get the ball the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that you go up for it and you think, okay, let me scan the floor to see where Westbrook is, and now I can I can block it to him and then he can start the break. Like, sometimes you just go up and you hit it because that's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, crap, they're about to score.
Right, exactly. I don't think you're necessarily measuring like, all right, I should try to catch it or
should I block this with my left hand or right hand?
Right. I think it's such a bang bang moment that you're just trying to make sure that you get it, right?
Yeah.
And but so,
like, that's the area that Ibaka has definitely improved in you know, I've seen a lot this year, is that he seriously just knows where to be more often than he ever has.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, his blocks are actually down a little bit this year, but I think he's by far, this is the best defense he's ever played, just because I think he's not getting caught up in the idea that he has to go try to block everything, and so he's not caught out of position near as much. He's a lot more sound in the pick and roll. I feel like that, you know, people forget that this guy, you know, he's only 24 years old, and he's only played competitive basketball really since he was like 16 or 17 years old. So he's definitely still trying to learn the game. And I think, you know, Serge Ibaka, he is an extremely intelligent guy. I think he speaks like 5 or 6 languages. But in terms of his basketball IQ, I think he's trying to play catch up a little bit. And I think he's just now kind of starting to get there. So, I mean, I think this is by far the best defensive season he's had.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that the Thunder are good. They're a really good team, because I just looked up like the on-off numbers, and he's up like a plus 7.2 per 100 possessions, but that's like ninth on the team. It's like eighth or ninth on the team. So I like was going down the
share. Who's number one? Tell us who's number one.
Nick Collison, your boy.
Of course he is.
Is there a person? And I don't want to get you in trouble because you are married to a lovely woman, but is there a person on this planet you would take a bullet for first above Nick Collison?
Poof. That's a tough question.
Let's just hope she's not listening.
No, I'll tell her to quit listening about 30 minutes
ago. Right.
No, she knows that in Royce's personal power rankings that Nick Collison probably ranks equal to or above her.
Okay. As long as she's, probably. I mean, she's. She knows you. She's known you for a while now. Like, I'm sure she's just accepted this as the truth.
Yeah, it's like he loves Nick Collison. I love him. It's a weird thing.
That God, this team is just good. They're even good with Derek Fisher on the court.
I know.
They're better with Derek Fisher on the court.
I know. That's what's like driving me nuts. Is like there's nothing you can really with Kendrick Perkins. You've got some numbers that you can say, look, here's it's not working. This is kind of dumb to be playing this guy this much. With Derek Fisher, it's like. He's shooting 40% from three since January. He's – I think they're a plus 11.9. I think
yeah.
I was looking at these stats up yesterday myself. And a plus 11.9 per 100 possessions with him on the floor. And there's really nothing to say that, like, Derek Fisher should not be playing, because now you look at it and you're like, crap, the numbers are now supporting the minutes he's getting.
Are you – let's say Thunder make it to the finals. There's a Avery Johnson – on the Spurs moment where he has to hit a clutch shot to secure the championship. Are you going to be okay with that? I mean, because it's a championship, and you get to cover a championship team, and that'll be fun. But Derek Fisher doing it, are you going to be okay with that?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Is there a certain point where maybe you do, like, the coach on the sideline thing where you get up and clap at him, trying to distract him?
I know. I just run out there and just tackle him.
Who's the ref? Bill Kennedy that, like, ran at Chris Humphreys?
Yeah. That'll be me.
That would be interesting. So, what's the latest before I let you go? What's the latest update on Russell Westbrook coming back from injury?
Well, actually, you know, before Sunday's game against the Knicks, he was out on the court doing like full speed stuff, which is kind of an interesting step that he's taken, because in most of the games before, he'd been out there and he was like shooting like set shot jumpers, doing some ball handling stuff, but like not jumping, not running, not cutting, not doing anything. But Sunday's game, he was out there full speed running, doing the, you know, kind of his patented sprint as fast as he can, stop and hit a pull up jumper thing that he does. And so, I mean, I was kind of wondering, like, man, is he going to play today? Because, like, you know, he was going full out. But then Scott Brooks was asked about it pregame, said that Westbrook's not doing any full contact practice stuff yet.
Okay.
And they still just expect him back after the All-Star break. So I would think that, you know, a lot of people have kind of said that the February 20th game against the Heat would be when he returns. But it may be the game before that. I think that's the 17th. I think that he's going to be back right on the time that they said.
Everyone I've talked to that comes through Minneapolis or is here is just like, it's trying to figure out the West, and then everyone's like, well, Westbrook comes back, it's the Thunders to lose.
Yeah.
They are just really that good.
I mean, they've been the best team in the league, I think, record-wise, since Westbrook – not record-wise, that's not right. But they've been the best team in the West since Westbrook went out. I mean, they've taken over the West – they're now 3.5 games up on the Spurs. They're right behind the Pacers now for margin of victory. Obviously, Durant's been incredible, but you're going to add in a top, you know, 6-7 player here, a guy that the team was 21-4 with him, and he's going to, you know, it's not like they're making a trade for this guy, so they've got to go through like some chemistry issues.
Right. They know what he is.
5 years, they know how to play together.
Yeah.
So yeah, they should be pretty good once he comes back.
Kevin Durant won Player of the Month in January, which I guess is fine. After Shabazz Muhammad's 12-point outburst and career high the other night, are you worried about February not going to Durant?
It's dicey, you know.
I feel like it's up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, that was the beginning of something great.
It might have been.
It obviously was.
All right, Royce, follow you on Twitter, at Royce Young. It's weird not to be at Daily Thunder anymore.
I know. I actually checked that, like, I have Daily Thunder still, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, just auto-tweets, like, posts on my site. And I checked that the other day, and there's still a lot of people that are tweeting at me. They just think I'm some kind of jerk that's not responding. And I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, I like this. I like aloof Royce. Just be above it all.
Yeah, I'm just going to just ignore it all.
All right, thank you so much.